Welcome to Millington Baptist Church. The message you are about to hear was delivered at Millington by Dr. Peter Pendel.
What I have for you is a quiz. What do these have in common? Tom Hanks, 1719, Gilligan's Island. Some of you are nodding because you know they all have somebody lost. Every one of them has somebody lost. You know about Tom Hanks, perhaps, because you saw him in Castaway. He's lost in Castaway. If you're a history buff or a literature major, then you know 1719 is when Robinson Crusoe was first published. Some say that was the first English novel. It was about a man and his family who were lost. And if you watch Gilligan's Island, you want a good laugh, then you know what happened there. Seven people were shipwrecked. They are lost. In that same vein, you have Survivor and you have Lost. Kind of a common theme, isn't it, in the midst of our entertaining world and entertainment world. If you have ever been separated from your parents as a child, you know the terror that's what comes with being lost. Maybe a long time ago, maybe recent, but if you were ever lost from your parents, then you know the fear and pain, and it doesn't go away quickly. You carry that probably for the rest of your life. If you're a parent and your child was lost at the county fair or the supermarket or someplace else, you know the terror that's filled your heart in that time. And you have never forgotten that either, because that is so much a part of marking your heart in your life. People get lost physically, but there's a more profound way of getting lost, and that is Lost in Translation. It's a movie. Listen to it. It's a movie that stars Bill Murray, and it's a movie star that he's playing whose career is shot, and he's on the downhill slide, and he doesn't have a chance of putting things together again. The tagline of the movie is, "Everyone wants to be found." Everyone. Everyone. That's not physically. Everyone wants to be found in terms of who they are, in terms of finding a place where this is home, and people are there to welcome you and make sure that you're a part of their family, whatever family that is. Everyone wants to be found. You belong here. Everybody. Walter Truett Anderson wrote a book entitled Reality Isn't What It Used to Be, and he quotes a teenager who says, "I belong to the blank generation. I have no beliefs. I belong to no community, tradition, or anything like that. I'm lost in this vast, vast world. I belong nowhere. I have absolutely no identity." Margaret, you were talking about kids in high school now and the pressure that's on them. There are a lot of kids who can identify that as being their story today, right now. Lost in the deepest sense. There's another word that I picked up from somebody else, and I'm not sure I'm saying it right, but it's E-N-N-U-I in the French. And you, I think, somebody told me, is the way you pronounce it. And ennui is a word that's used in the French language to literally mean annoyance, but it has become to mean a dissatisfaction or boredom of the soul that makes life tasteless. That's close to home, isn't it? And if it's close to your home, then you've added spices to life, or you've tried to, and you've gone to all kinds of degrees to add some spice to life, but in the end, it is still boring and tasteless. It's another form of being lost. You could be lost in a life-controlling habit. And, you know, we can name the drugs and the alcohol and those kinds of things, but you could be lost in the midst of life-controlling anger and spending without control, and broken relationships, and you know, a lot of ways to be lost. And what the Bible addresses is being lost in those ways. It's not so much about being physically lost at the supermarket. Bible's talking about being lost in those particular ways that are deeper in the soul and in the heart and in the spirit. And in Luke chapter 15, Jesus tells three stories, and he tells the three stories using the idea of people being lost or things being lost. And in each of those, he talks about the extent to which the one who's lost something goes to find them and works to get them back in the way that he once had them. First story is about about a shepherd's lost sheep. And the second one is about a woman's lost coin. And then you know the third one, it's about a boy who's lost. We call him the prodigal son. It is about the father who's lost his son. And relate probably to that last one, the father and the son, because that's a human dimension, and most of us can relate to that because we may have been on one side of that equation, either the father or the child, the son or the daughter, or maybe the mother with the son or the daughter who's been lost in one way or another, and lots of us have gone through that, and we know what that's like and how very difficult that is. The reason why we're looking at this passage for this Sunday in which we're on the subject of resolving conflict is because truth is that we are called to be the Father with each other like God has been the Father to us. So what we do is we take time now to look at this story of a father and a son, and you can use the mother and the daughter image, that's fine, but the father and the son in this case, in the story that Jesus teaches, so that we can learn to be the people with each other that the Father is with us. And man, if that's not at the core of resolving conflict, I don't know what is. So Luke chapter 15, I want to take you to the first two verses and then down to verse 11 and go through verse 32, but I want to go to verses 1 and 2 just to get the context so you can get some idea of what's going on here. Verse 1 of 15 says, "Now the tax collectors and sinners were all gathering around to hear him, but the Pharisees and the teachers of the law muttered, 'This man welcomes sinners and eats with them.'" So there's your setting. That's where these three stories are going to come up. We're only going to look at one of them, but the simple setting is that we have very proud people who are religiously right, not politically necessarily, but religiously, they are in the right. And then you've got all these other people who are the scum of the earth in their minds, who don't dress right, who don't act right, who don't think right, who they're just off the reservation. And the ones who are so proud about it are getting these words from Jesus so that they can understand what they need to do in their own hearts and with anybody else who's around them, whether they seem to be lost or they don't seem to be lost. Let me take you down to verse 11. Jesus continued, "There was a man who had two sons. The younger one said to his father, 'Father, give me my share of the estate.' So he divided his property between them. Not long after that, the younger son got together all he had, set off for a distant country, and there squandered his wealth in wild living. After he had spent everything, there was a severe famine in that whole country, and he began to be in need. So he went and hired himself out to a citizen of that country, who sent him to his fields to feed pigs. He longed to fill his stomach with the pods that the pigs were eating, but no one gave him anything. When he came to his senses, he said, 'How many of my father's hired men have food to spare? And here I am starving to death. I will set out and go back to my father and say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me like one of your hired men.' So he got up and went to his father. But while he was still a long way off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion for him. He ran to his son, threw his arms around him, and kissed him. Son said to his father, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son.' But the father said to his servants, 'Quick, bring the best robe and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. Bring the fattened calf and kill it. Let's have a feast and celebrate. For this son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found.' So they began to celebrate. Meanwhile, the older son was in the field. When he came near the house, he heard the music and dancing, and so he called one of the servants and asked him what was going on. 'Your brother has come,' he replied. 'Your father has killed the fattened calf because he has him back safe and sound.' Older brother became angry and refused to go in. So his father went out and pleaded with him. But he answered his father, 'Look, all these years I've been slaving for you and never disobeyed your orders. Yet you never gave me even a young goat so I could celebrate with my friends. But when this son of yours, who squandered your property with prostitutes, comes home, you kill the fattened calf for him.' 'My son,' the father said, 'you're always with me, and everything I have is yours. But we had to celebrate and be glad because this brother of yours was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found.'" I don't know that I've ever done this before. I'm sure I haven't. 90% of this message comes from somebody else. Just, you know, if you go someplace else and you hear the message, you'll say, "Oh, wait a minute. They must have copied Pendel." No, Pendel is copying somebody else. Because as I read through it, I thought about the passage, the picture that is used in drawing this out is one that I've never thought of. I don't know of anybody else who has either. But it's this whole question of how do we view God? And it's for everybody. I don't care if you're Baptist background or Catholic or Jewish or Muslim or agnostic or atheist. It's how do we view God? If you view God at all, how do you view God? And the real question that comes out of this passage, and the question boils up and bubbles up very quickly as you read the passage, is he father or is he employer? Let's take it one at a time. If God is employer, then life is about satisfying his demands, doing a good job, looking good, selling his product, obeying his rules. That's what you do, isn't it? That's what you do on the job. You do that 5 days a week, 6 days a week, because that's what a job is like, and that's what you do for your employer. And if you're self-employed, then you do the same thing for yourself. You satisfy them. And when you work for an employer and you do your job, then you expect to reap the rewards from that job. And those rewards ought to be extensive, and the more you do in terms of the employer's request, the more you ought to get the rewards. And you might even get an eternal reward. You're going to get something out of the thing, and the bonuses are going to come. I know there's exceptions to that rule, and the rewards are going to come, because that's the way it works when you work for somebody. Anybody remember, I know some of you do, when we first came here in 1981, there was a colossal shift that was taking place in the corporate world. And those of you who worked for AT&T know exactly what I'm talking about. There were a lot of people at Millington in 1981 who had worked for one company all their life, and they expected to retire from that company and no changes to come in the meantime. Then about 1983, divestiture hit, and you can remember some of the guys and women who are here had worked all that time, and now no longer was AT&T going to maintain them or reward them or pay them. The deal was being broken between them. And I'll tell you, there were a lot of disheartened people around Millington Baptist Church and other places who were going through this shift that was taking place in the corporate world, and now that looks like it's long ago, and I guess it is, but it impacted a lot of people. A lot of people were hurt by that. One of our men who got out well in the right timing, but one of our men came out of the Army and he didn't have any college. He went to AT&T and worked in the mailroom. So this was back in the late 40s, and he worked in the mailroom and he worked his way up. And he got his bachelor's degree and he got a master's degree, and then he worked his way up more and more and more and more and more. And he finally retired from AT&T. He was one of those guys that got out when getting out was good. Because AT&T was an employer. Almost seemed like it was a father at times. But AT&T was never a father. AT&T was an employer. Is God an employer to you? It's going to have tremendous ramifications if you say yes to that question. Let's see if there's a difference when we ask the question, is God father to you? And see if there's any real difference between the two. Now, I suppose that your response to that will depend on how your father treated you. You know, I mean, if your father was absent, or if your father didn't take care of you, or if your father did something aggressive towards you, then you're going to have a very different image of father, unless that's corrected, than somebody like me. My father was always my father. I mean, I look back, and he built boundaries, and he disciplined me, and he did those kinds of things a father has to do, but I never for one moment saw him as an employer. He was always my father. He treated me like a father. He wanted what was best for me. He wanted me to do well, not so he could have bragging rights. He wanted me to make a good living, not so I could take care of him when he was old. He wanted me to be well known, not because he wanted to bask in the glory of my light. No, he just wanted me to live up to my potential in all areas of life. Because somehow he had the idea, and I think it's right, if I lived up to my potential, regardless of whether I got a lot of money or regardless of whether anybody saw it, I'd be happy. And what he cared about was that I was happy. Not that I made a lot of money and not that I was recognized or any of those things. Didn't matter to him. He just wanted Peter to be happy. That's all. He wanted my sister Georgie to be happy. So he treated us like a father treats children. I remember, I think I've said this before, I came home one day and I said, I think I'm going to be in terms of the job. And I still remember him saying, and it's probably a life-defining moment. You know, you have those life-defining moments when somebody says something, you say, oh, yeah. And years later, you can still remember it when they said it because it made such a difference in the outlook of life that you carry from that point. He said, that's a great job, Peter. I think that'd be a wonderful place for you to invest your life, but you can do better than that. Man, I mean, it was as if I was looking down here, and he said, no, look up a little bit. And I ended up looking up there at the stars. And what I ended up doing wasn't better than what I proposed to do. That wasn't the issue. But what my dad wanted was for everything that was in me to come out and to contribute towards happiness. In fact, anybody who has a good father, and if you can identify me, nobody has to tell you to love your father. You just do that. Now, I know there's times when you don't. I understand that. And there were times when I didn't. And there were times when I probably hated my father, and I probably told him things I shouldn't have said, and I understand that. But when you come back to the balance point of life, and you begin to look at things in perspective, then you don't have to be told to love your father. I mean, I give my life for my father. He's in heaven now. I give my life for my father, because my father would have given his life for me at any point along the way. He never would have said, no, I'm not going to do that. You go ahead. How do you not love somebody like that? So as we peel back the layers of this story that Jesus gives about the father and the son, the one that we typically call the prodigal son, the question we need to be asking is, do people there in that story see God as father, or do they see God as employer? And I think you're going to find some interesting things in this that I discovered as I studied this. So with that question in the back of our minds, let's look at the younger son. And when you look at the younger son, the first thing you come to, obviously, is the first request. The first request he makes is, Father, give me my share of the estate, Luke 15:12. Now, that doesn't sound unreasonable to me. You know, I get my 21st century glasses on, and I put them on, and I say, that's not so bad. Maybe the kid's got a plan. Maybe he's got a dream. He's going to chase his dream. He's an entrepreneur. He's got great ideas, so the father's going to give him his inheritance early. Yeah, it's early. I understand that. But it doesn't sound so bad. It doesn't sound like such a negative thing. That's how I look at it from the 21st century. How would the people of the first century look at it? Because you're talking about centuries difference, and you're talking about generations, and you're talking about cultures, you're talking about all kinds of things. So the way I look at it in 21st century is not what counts. The way it would have been heard is the way it counts. Kenneth Bailey, a biblical scholar who has lived 40 years in the Middle East and has had hundreds of conversations with Middle Eastern people about this particular episode in the Bible that Jesus talks about, has asked them, have you ever had a son ask for his inheritance? And the typical response he gets from Middle Easterners is, never! And that's in capitals intentionally because that's the way he said it. Never. Bailey says, could anyone ever make such a request? Impossible. Wouldn't happen. Bailey says, if anyone ever did ask, what would happen? His father would beat him, of course. No question. Bailey says, why? Because asking for an inheritance means the son wants his father to die. Oh man, that's a new light on that passage, isn't it? So you mean the younger son was asking his father to step out of the way and die? Yeah. Yeah, that's what he was asking for. Second request. You know what happens. The boy goes away, wastes his money, thinks he's going to have a great time, links up with great friends, but they're only his friends because he has money. You've got friends like that, I'll bet. He spends all his money, has nothing left, and so he comes back, or he's going to come back. And in chapter 15, verse 19, he's going to say, I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me like one of your hired men. This is what he's thinking and planning before he comes back. He says, I'm going to say this to my dad. I've realized this is a ridiculous way to live. I'm not going to do this anymore. And the servants in my father's household have decent food. I mean, they have a place to sleep. They have to work hard, but so what? I don't have any of that stuff now. So I'm going to go back, and this is what I'm going to say. Actually, it's kind of interesting. He never got to say the full statement. In fact, he got as far as, I am no longer worthy to be called your son, period. And the reason why he didn't get to say the whole thing is because his father interrupted him and wouldn't let him say it. But even without that, you look at this statement and you say, well, that sounds reasonable. And what's the kid going to do? He's going to go home and he's going to say, I'm sorry. Of course he's going to go home and say, I'm sorry. He's been a jerk. Maybe he's learned his lessons. Maybe he hasn't. He's embarrassed his father in the first episode. So for him to go back and say, I'm sorry, forgive me, make me a slave, whatever you want to do with me, that sounds like a good idea to me. In fact, I'd be waiting for that. He's wasted it all. He's blown the whole thing, and now he's come to his senses, maybe. Here's the question. Does he see God as father or employer? He calls him father, but doesn't he see him as employer? Yeah, even in his words. Make me like one of your servants. Well, what about the older son? Now, you know what happened. The boy came back, and the father killed the fattened calf and had this party for him, and they're all celebrating, and everything's great. Older son is such a good son. Listen to what he says about himself. And I think he's honest with this. I've been slaving for you and never disobeyed your orders, yet you never gave me even a young goat so I could celebrate with my friends. But when the son of yours who has squandered your property with prostitutes comes home, you killed a fattened calf for him? You kidding? So what are the son's credentials? Well, he's surely not a slacker. He's never rebelled. He's waited patiently for his bonus. And now his bonus is being given to this bum. I sympathize with him. Where's the justice in that? He's working for a lousy company. He's such a great worker. And the other guy isn't. So where's the fairness in that? He's also an angry son. And that comes out as these kinds of things make it come out. When he's invited to join the party, the older brother became angry and refused to go in. Chapter 15, verse 28. But really, who can blame him? Come on. Who can blame him? Put yourself in the same spot. And look at the older son who's been faithful the whole time. If your boss did this to you, what would you say? You've got to be kidding. I get the bonus. He doesn't get the bonus. I put in the time. I was faithful. I worked hard. I deserve the reward. It's too bad he couldn't go to another company. There's a lousy company, a lousy boss, and he can't do anything about it because there's no other companies hiring in his town. And he didn't do that in that day. He had to stay with his lousy job, working for his lousy boss, unappreciated, mistreated, and frustrated. So here's the question. Does he see his father, God, as his father, or does he see him as employer? Man. And again, he uses the right words, at least in part, but this is employer talk. And in fact, the funny thing is that I discovered as I read through this, that's true with both sons. And that's the strange part about this picture. We usually see the younger son as the one who came to his senses, got things together, and so he's welcomed by the father. Yeah, he did in a sense, but don't they both see God as employer? If I do the right things, then I'll get the right things. And if I do them in the right order, then I'll get them in the right order. If you had to adopt the older son or the younger son, who would you adopt? I'd adopt the older son. He'd take care of me in my old age. No question about that. But I wouldn't be his father in the process. I'd be more like his employer. He's my social security. But that doesn't seem to be the way the father treats it. And that's the amazing part of this picture. So let's take the step and look at the father. How does he see himself? Does the father see himself as a father, or does he see himself as an employer? The father and the younger son, for instance. He must have been blown away by the younger son's first request. I mean, he must have been brokenhearted. There is nothing that breaks a father's heart or a mother's heart like the rebellion of their son or their daughter. When they turn away from father or mother, I'll tell you, there's nothing like that. Kids, you've got your parents' heart in your hands. You really do. And you can go like that to it, and you will crush it. Because it belongs to you during those days. You can do what you want with it. You've got that choice. But I'll tell you what, when you do it, you're going to either bring joy to your mom and dad's heart or you're going to break their heart. This man's heart is broken because his son has told him, and you bet the word has gotten around, you need to die and I want my money. Because that's what the community would hear. Now, surely word's gotten around. Even if no one was present when the request was made, everybody's got to know it. You can't keep that kind of rebellion hidden. There's just no way you can keep it hidden. So, add to the broken heart, embarrassment. His heart is broken because his son has turned his back on him, but he's embarrassed as well because the community knows about it. It's all public knowledge. There was no internet, but boy, I'll tell you, you ran to your next door neighbor and told him what was going on in Joe's house, and then they ran on to Betty's house and told her what was going on, and by that time, it got worse than it was in the beginning. You know the telephone game where the rumor goes around and gets bigger and bigger and bigger? Well, that's the way it was. So the insult and the embarrassment and the broken heart is just unbelievable. How would an employer respond to that? Well, an employer would respond with anger. Of course. He would dress him one side and up and down both sides, and he'd push him out the door, and he said, you'll never do that again, and if you ever do, you won't work here. And in fact, he might not even get another chance. He'll say, you're gone. Don't come here. I don't want to see you. In fact, after the first request, it's amazing that the father didn't say that. And when he comes back, it's amazing that he goes out and, yeah, that's what it is. That's what an employer does. An employer responds by that, but he's a father. So he divided this property between them. This was a breaking of the inheritance for both boys from what Jesus says. This was not, I give it to the younger son and I hold it for the older son and then he gets it later. This was right then and there. They both got their share. That's a father. That's not an employer. And the traitor leaves, but the father won't say good riddance. The traitor goes away. I would expect the father to say, hey, don't come back. Don't let the door hit you in the can as you leave, because I want you to go all the way down that hill and don't come back this hill, because I don't want to see you. And I suspect that you've had dads that have acted like that with you, and I apologize if that hurts, because it brings back memories. This father, he waits for his boy. While he was still a long way off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion for him. He ran to his son, threw his arms around him, and kissed him. Now, I can't prove this, but I think the father was standing in the doorway, leaning against the doorway, saying, oh God, would you bring my son back? Would you bring my son back? Because I love him. And I'd love to put my arms around him. I'd love to have a feast for him. Would you bring him back? Or maybe he and his mother were sitting by the window, and they'd sit there, and day after day, they'd wait and talk to God and say, God, would you bring our boy back? Like some parents have done that with their boy and their girl. Would you bring him back? Because all I want to do is love him. And I can help him grow up without the troubles that he's gotten himself into now. Because that's what a father does. That's a lousy employer. That's a lousy manager and boss. But that's what a father does. The boy comes back and he says, I failed you. And then he's going to say, treat me like one of your servants. But before he can do that, the father interrupts. The father said to his servant, quick, bring the best robe and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. Bring the fattened calf and kill it. Let's have a feast and celebrate. For this son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found. So they began to celebrate. Is he crazy? Is he deluded? Is he a glutton for punishment? He is if he's an employer. But he's not an employer. He's a father. What about the father and the older son? Older son's embarrassing him now. Hey, listen, the older son has an official place at the banquet. And when he doesn't show up, that's empty. And everybody knows that he's out in the field taking care of things. That's not where he's supposed to be. He's supposed to be at his father's right hand. He's the older son. That's a place for the older son. Everybody knows it. So the father's embarrassed once again with his boys. First it's the younger boy, and now it's the second boy, the older boy. Embarrasses him, hurts him. He's supposed to be there at his right hand. Honest. I mean, if I had two sons like that, I would have had it up to my eyeballs by now with the second son. The first son might have skated. The second one, oh boy, it'd be good riddance to you. Stay out here. I don't care if you ever come inside. You can stop for your paycheck of wheat and soy and whatever else you've been growing, but I don't care. That would be an employer. That wouldn't be a father. So how does the father respond? Father went out and pleaded with him. Went out and pleaded with him. He didn't send a second messenger. Could have done that. He didn't send a third messenger. He could have done that. He could have shouted from the house, come on in here, you stupid kid. He didn't do that. He went and begged him. He pleaded with him. What kind of man is that? That's a father. That's what's different about it. That's why the question, is he employer or is he father, has to be answered for you, for me. Because the father in the story is God. So is God my employer or is he my father? And if he's my father, then oh, that changes everything. Like it did here. Older son pokes his fingers, as it were, in his father's eyes, and here's his father's response. My son, the father said, you are always with me, and everything I have is yours. But we had to celebrate and be glad because this brother of yours was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found. And notice that thing is yours. It's not will be yours in the future. It is yours now. It's yours. You're my son. I'm going to treat you like my son, whether you treat me like an employer or not. You're still my son, and I'm going to treat you like that. And someday you're going to get around to seeing me as father. Because he would make a lousy boss. The hard workers would feel cheated. You know what this is like at work. The hard workers would feel cheated. And then the ones who were skating, they'd take advantage of him. He'd lose in both cases. He'd be a terrible employer. But he's a great father. He's a great father. The father's not an employer. He's the father. He's the father. What the father wants is for his sons and daughters to come home. That's all he wants. You know? And he doesn't want it in the sense of the father who's going to say, see you, dope. See what you did. I told you to do this. You did that. And then beat him up with words or with his fists or with a stick. That's not his game. He doesn't do that. That may be an employer. That may be a warped picture of what a father is like. But this father is different than that. If we get anything from this picture of the father, we ought to get the picture that this is a father, unlike the fathers that a lot of us have known, and unlike the employers that we know who have to do some of the things they have to do. I understand that. But fathers don't do that. Fathers are different than that. And yeah, fathers discipline and fathers correct and fathers build boundaries. And yeah, but they do that because they don't want us to walk outside the reservation and get hurt. Not because they want to control, not because they want to get back at us, not because they want to pay us off and all that stuff. That isn't a father's deal. A father's deal is I love you and therefore I'm going to help you build some boundaries for your life so you don't walk off the reservation and get hurt. But believe it, son, when you come back, I'm going to love you. And when you're still out there, I'm going to stand at the door and wait for you to come home. And I'm going to wait like this. Because my arms are going to be outstretched for you. And when you come home, I'm going to get my arms around you as fast as I can. And I don't care if everybody in the world thinks I'm stupid. It doesn't matter. Because I'm your father. You know, you come to a place like this, and I swear, I think there are men and women who need to come back to the Father. And maybe it's the first time come to the Father, recognizing him as the Father, and not as some judge out there who's ready to load a boom on you, but a Father who wants to welcome you back. That's who he is. And if it's the first time, that's wonderful. I heard from a guy who, in fifth and sixth grade Sunday school, Mark Malolo's class, Sam Hernandez, trusted in Christ. Fifth or sixth grade, going to be baptized in November. You know? So maybe it's the first time for you. Or maybe in the hardness of life, when things are tough, and God doesn't make the decisions that you think you ought to make, you've turned him into an employer. The one you knew as a father has become an employer, or more or less an employer. And you think that if I do certain things, then he'll reward me and things will get straightened out. No, no, no. Come back to the Father. Just come back. We're going to sing in a minute. I'm going to invite you to come forward. But not so I can see you, but so God can see you. And so your kids can see you, and your wife and your husband and your friend and your anybody who's here can see you. And know that you made a decision. I'm not going to see God as my employer. I'm going to see him as my Father. Because that's who he is. And he sent his one and only son so that I could be one of his kids. Boy, I'm going to act like one of his kids now. And I'm just going to naturally love him because he has loved me in such preposterous terms in spite of who I am. So let's pray together and then we'll sing. It's such a powerful picture for me, Lord. I thank you that I had the kind of dad who was a dad. So this is not a strange picture for me, but I know that that's not true with everybody. And I know there are men and women here today who have had a really tough picture of dad. It's planted deeply within the heart, and it creates its own scars and wounds and difficulties in moving forward in any area. But Lord, would you replace that picture so that they might see God as Father, not as employer, not as waiting judge, but as Father who calls his children home. And whether it's the first time a decision's being made to come to the Father, or it's the 20th time to turn from the employer idea to the Father idea, God, would you cross people over the line today? Walk with them. Help them to see that you're waiting for them. You're the Father who's waiting in the doorway, arms extended, wanting his kids to come home. Teach us how to do that today, we pray in Jesus' name. Amen.